Berries.
So we are. So obviously, it's not so seasonal to be talking about Pesach so much, but it's just kind of the way the Torah breaks it down. So we talked last week about the Karban Pesach. So the truth is, there's actually two other mitzvot we could have done instead, but I wanted to just kind of do Pesach as a theme since we're getting into it last week, and the next 2 weeks we'll do. What's it called? We'll do tefillin, and we'll do the firstborn. Right? We'll talk about the mitzvah of what to do with a firstborn animal and a firstborn son, the pidyon haben, which is a very interesting practice. That's it's the mitzvah that still goes on today. I don't know if you've seen that.
Is that a mitzvah to have the firstborn?
The pidyon haben is a mitzvah. Yeah. Yeah, that I mean, only in certain circumstances. And the truth is, it's kind of rare because there are many circumstances when you don't actually have a pidyon haben. A lot of things have to go right.
Yeah, I understand that.
But
it's not fair.
What's not fair?
Because nobody has control of it. It's going to be a boy or a girl. And as far as I'm concerned...
A lot of mitzvot aren't fair. Oh, are you kidding me?
I mean...
You mean for fairness?
Yeah.
If you have five girls, you can't do the mitzvah of...
I mean, five...
Milah. I mean, a lot of mitzvot.
To have a child itself, it's a mitzvah.
True.
But to restrict it to a male or a female, isn't that chauvinistic?
You want to have that class now? Oh, goodness. Tommy, that's a class into itself. Look,
that's a class into itself.
Yeah. You put me the expert. I mean,
chauvinistic. Goodness.
When I had my... Ginny had the... We had our first baby. I wanted so bad a girl that I named... You know, Ginny has the right to name the baby.
Right.
And she's a mummy.
True.
But even today, she's going to be 27 next end of this month. I still call her another name. I don't call Maxine.
You call her by her Hungarian name.
No, I call her
Kati. Kati, right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's why I told her. I want a Kati. And I was so happy I could... When I called up my mother to tell her that I have a girl, it didn't come out of my mouth.
So good. So what are you complaining about?
I was very happy. So why can't I be happy, just as happy as a boy, or celebrate?
Would you be any more happy if you had a very specific ceremony to do 30 days later? Would that have made you happier?
No.
So what are you complaining about?
I'm not complaining. But it's not fair that she didn't get the gold.
The gold? She was 30 days old. She doesn't care.
The coin gets the gold.
Hey.
Yeah,
you know what?
You save money, by the way.
You ask any baby boy, right? You say, okay, here's the deal. You'll get the bris and you'll get the gold ceremony. Or you can have neither one. What would you often take?
The gold.
The gold coins.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And they don't even keep the gold. They just have a ceremony. They don't keep it. It's not... But anyway, we'll save it for next week, okay?
Right.
We'll save it for next week, and we can talk about it. Okay.
Where are we? What page?
That's a good question. What page should we start from today? We're starting on page 360. Okay, now this mitzvah, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go through the paragraph here that talks about the Chag of Pesach and the mitzvot that are connected to it. And we'll see, it's a very eclectic, very difficult passage to read, very difficult paragraph to read. And we're going to go through it and then kind of ask questions on it and really pick it apart and then try to find what it's trying to accomplish. So first, from the source number, from the beginning, someone want to read page 361? Any volunteers?
From where?
Norman's our good our reader.
From where?
He likes to hear himself on the internet in the class. From the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel, of the 13th chapter, verse 1.
Okay. So yep. Moses said to the people,
Remember the day on which you departed from Egypt.
No, go back. Oh. Hashem spoke to Moses saying.
Hashem spoke to Moses saying, sanctify to me every firstborn. The first issue of every womb among the children of Israel, of man and beast, is mine.
Okay, so I'm not going to get into that. That's the next mitzvah. That's the mitzvah we'll do next week. But it's very, I don't think we have to go very far to figure out why Hashem's talking about firstborns when we just went through the plague of the firstborn, right? That's there's a pretty clear connection. We'll develop that more next week. Okay. Go on.
Moses said to the people, remember this day on which you departed from Egypt, from the house of bondage, for with a strong hand God removed you from here, and therefore chametz may not be eaten.
Okay, so let's just, I want to make sure we don't go, we're going to discuss line by line just so we don't let things pass. So what's the first line saying? What's the first pasuk saying?
Remember this
to
day.
Remember the day.
Remember this day. So which day is that?
That's the day they left Egypt or the day of Passover.
So the first day of Pesach, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So if you had the first, this is pasuk, how many days long is Pesach?
One.
One day. Right, remember this day.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. This is the relevant day. Okay. The day that you leave Egypt from slavery, right? Because you're removed with a strong hand. And what's this? The last part of the pasuk?
Therefore,
chametz
may not be
eaten. Okay. One more time. How is that connected? Why can't chametz be eaten?
Because we're supposed to eat matzah instead.
Because we're supposed to remember the day we left Egypt.
But how do we do that? Right now, it's interesting.
And also, what's chametz?
But,
right, what is even chametz? We don't even know what it is. Right?
I think it's because as you clean yourself, you were a slave, and you become a free man, you cleaned everything else, what was before, it's chametz.
But we didn't say about cleaning, right? It says v'lo ye'achel chametz. All we said here is you can't eat it. Doesn't say to clean it. Doesn't say to do anything to it. Just don't eat it. Don't eat it. When should you not eat this chametz?
You can't tell it to the rabbi.
When you leave Egypt, starting this day.
When you remember the day that you left Egypt.
Yeah, when you remember the day.
Okay, so that's one. So one way of reading it is, remember this day and don't eat chametz. You could also read it as never eat chametz, right? Just don't eat it.
If you disconnect one part of the sentence from the other.
Well, but you're right. But it is somewhat disconnected. It's just v'lo yecha chametz. In English is and therefore chametz may not be eaten. But there's no therefore in the English.
No.
V'lo yecha chametz and don't eat chametz.
If this was remember the day or don't eat chametz, then it's disjunctive. But if it says therefore.
But it doesn't say therefore. The English says therefore, but the Hebrew.
It says
v'lo ye'achel chametz and don't eat chametz.
By the way,
don't eat chametz.
I don't hold to the Hebrew version. I hold to this one.
You hold to the English. The English version. So we're not going to stick to the original. We'll just, and even so, it just says remember this day. There's no real commandment, right?
The only command is the chametz.
Right, but the first half of the verse, there's no commandment to do anything on that day, just remember it. Mm-hmm. Now it's true we have times when remember means something. Zachor Yom HaShabbat, remember the Shabbos day. So it ends up meaning we do certain things. But from the first pasuk, we don't know what it means to remember it. Well, there's a lot of ways to remember things.
And most importantly, what's chametz, right? At that point, nobody knew what chametz
is. Right, so we don't know what chametz is. We don't know why it's important. We don't know why it's relevant. We don't even know when we're not supposed to eat it. Right? It could mean that day. All I'm saying is, if someone read this verse for the first time and said, it's saying never eat chametz, I'd say, you know what, that's a legitimate way of reading that pasuk. It's a legitimate way of reading it. I understand if you want to take the context and say that it can only mean the first day, but, there's a right now we've got a lot more questions than answers. Okay, pasuk number two.
Today you are leaving in the month of springtime.
Okay. What is that telling us? It's a weather report. It's just giving us the time frame.
It's a time frame.
Pesach should be in the spring.
In the spring.
But it didn't say that. It should say, and therefore Pesach is in the spring. So make sure Pesach is always in the spring, right? Hayom atem. Today you are leaving. It is the springtime.
It's a little closer than that because it says the month. So spring is
You're right. It's the
months,
month so. of It's the right. Spring is 3 months long. So right, today you're leaving in the month of the spring. It's not. There's not a commandment. There's not even. We don't even know what to do with that information. It's just. It's just a side note. Like it's almost like a footnote. It's a side note. By the way, but today you are leaving, Bechodesh Ha'aviv, in the springtime, in the month of the springtime, like you said. But
maybe
yeah.
they wouldn't have known it was springtime otherwise.
They wouldn't have, or we wouldn't have.
The if they were slaves, maybe they wouldn't have known it was springtime.
Why not?
Had to be because springtime is when you have to take care of the soil to be able to grow everything for the next year.
But yeah, I think slaves would know more than anyone else because they're working the fields.
Yeah. So
they probably would be pretty well versed in what's happening when.
Yeah,
okay.
Seasons, they would. No, the
they would need to know that.
That's how you plan. That's
yeah, I would think they would need to know that as much as anyone.
But the thing is, if you would be, if we're saying like just remember any day, then Hashem is telling us remember that this day is when the month of springtime starts. So he's giving us like when we should start remembering that day going forward.
Okay, so.
But didn't he tell us that when he said to count the months starting from now, which was springtime?
Right, but we never saw a reference to springtime. We just saw count the months, right? I don't think.
No, there wasn't a reference to springtime. Right. It was springtime.
Yeah.
It was the beginning of Nisan. Start with this month. Start with the month of Nisan, which is in the spring. Mm-hmm. Right. But here we have this, right? Here we have this reference of this day being in spring, so some of that's going to be relevant. Okay, and we talked about that a little bit in the Rosh Chodesh class about how this is how we know to sync up the solar to the lunar calendars, right? We went through all that because the only reason we care about the solar calendar is so that Pesach is in the spring. And here is where we get the reference that Pesach is in the spring. So that's the whole concept of connecting the soul to lunar calendars is in these five words, basically. Which is, just to bring it back to what we said before. Okay, next verse, next pasuk.
And it shall come to pass when Hashem shall bring you to the land of the Canaanite, the Hittite and the Amorite, and the Hivite and the Jebusite, which he swore to your forefathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, you shall perform this service in this month.
Okay, so now where are we going with this? Now we're jumping ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Right, now we're going to the future. Okay?
Well, perform this service would be remembering.
Yeah, what's the service that we're doing?
Remembering the Exodus.
The explanation of the service to follow.
Corporate
acceptance.
What?
It follows.
Okay, but shouldn't you explain what it is that we're going to be doing before you tell me when and where to do it?
Well, it's like saying, and you will perform the following service, and it follows, it explains.
You shall perform this service in that month. I still don't know what service it was. Even the next pasuk just kind of shivat, it says to eat matzah during those 7 days. But
I think it's referring to the chametz, remembering and the chametz, both those.
Okay, so right, so the only two things we know right now is the only commandments we've had to this point are remembering leaving Egypt and don't eat chametz. So maybe now we can say so now we can limit that to when? When are we limiting that to?
First 7 days.
Not yet. We didn't get to that pasuk yet.
The first month. Of
to a month. Now we have a month long, not eating chametz. Maybe could read it that way. Although we already were told in the earlier pasuk, right? Vayomer Hashem, Zechor et Hayom Hazeh, remember this day.
Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't remember a month, we're not remembering a week, remembering a day.
But
so we start off remembering a day.
Remember this day, and it starts in spring.
But he said, remember this day in this month, the day in the month.
Right, so the day has to be in this month for the day to be relevant.
But not for the whole month.
But not for the whole month. Okay, so it has to fall out in this Chodesh, in this month, the month of Aviv, in the spring month. Okay. You see how this is a bit confusing, right? This is not the easiest
way. They
needed a better editor.
Fire the guy.
You need to read till the end of this.
No, I know, but the flow is so awkward. That's what I'm trying to... I really want to point out that you're right. In retrospect, if you took all the information and then pieced it together, you can make a more logical piece. But it just has a strange way of saying all these things.
He's saying, like,
kind of funny, you know, the whole thing is strange.
No, but later on, just to compare, let me just give you a comparison to see, to show you what I'm talking about here. So,
he spoke differently, man.
Ah, come on, that's a cop out of if I've ever heard one. All right, so let's go to page 683. This is in Parshat Emor, page 683 in the Art Scroll, and here in Parakhav Gimel 23, starting with verse 4, we have the description of Pesach later on. These are the appointed festivals of Hashem, the holy convocations which you shall designate at the appropriate time. In the first month, on the 14th of the month, in the afternoon, is the time of the Pesach offering to Hashem. Ah, okay, we start off with the Karban Pesach. This is when we do it. And on the 15th day of this month is the festival of Matzah to Hashem. Ah, so we start on the 15th day of the month. Perfect. You shall eat matzahs for a 7-day period. Ah, now I know what to do. On the first day, there should be a holy convocation. Oh, the first day is Yom Tov. And you shall do no laborious work. I can't do malacha on Yom Tov. It's like Shabbos. You shall bring a fire offering to Hashem for a 7-day period. Oh, that's the sacrifices I'm supposed to bring in the temple. On the 7th day shall be a holy convocation. Oh, the 7th day also is Yom Tov. And you shall do no laborious work. Got it. Thank you. I got the picture. Right?
Well,
this is the way you write it.
I know, but right? The difference is that this is page 683. This is page.
Yeah, Hashem got better over time at writing. Well, his writing skills got better.
First part was written by a lawyer.
By yeah, right. Wherefore, the undersigned, as described above, right.
More than 300 pages to explain it and develop it, and by
come on, Leonard, give me Leonard. Come on.
You wanted to be confusing at the beginning, so we kept reading. So by the time we got to the end,
it's boring, but still easy to read, right? That's every writer's goal, is to make it as confusing and difficult as possible. That's a good writer. That's how you're gonna make in this business, right? So, just to show you that. When the Torah wants to, it knows how to put things together in a way that's easy to read, right? And about the same exact subject matter. Okay, so here we are, back to where we started, where we don't know what's flying. Okay, so we've gone through this paragraph. It started off with the firstborn, which we skipped. We got into this commandment, semi-commandment. Remember this day that you left Egypt with a strong hand. Okay, we don't know how to do that. And by the way, don't eat chametz. Okay, we don't eat chametz, I guess on that day. Maybe forever, let's say, on that day. Hayom atem yotzi mechodesh Aviv, on this day, that's the day that you left. You left during the month of the springtime. Okay, fine. Then, when you go to Israel, you're going to still do this. Do this too. And then you'll do this service in that month. Okay, next pasuk.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, a quick question. What does it mean when it says, and it shall come to pass?
That that you will get to Israel. You're not there now. They're still in Egypt. They haven't even left Egypt yet, right? And when you get to Israel, and that's the interesting. Why do we need to be told this, right? Command us to do it now. We'll do it for the rest of time, right? Why do we need to be told you're still going to do this in Israel? Well, why wouldn't we do it in Israel, right? No.
And why is he telling us who this land is belongs to now?
Right. And to further question, you know, Rishonim point out it only there's. It was the land of the seven nations. There's only five listed. I wasn't going to really deal with that, but it's interesting. It's letting them know this land, but only lists five of the seven. If you're going to list all seven, why only five? So that's some of the commentaries deal with, but that's not really my topic. Okay, so why wouldn't we do this in Israel? Why do we need a separate commandment to do that? Okay, next.
For a 7-day period, you shall eat matzos.
Okay.
On the seventh day, there shall be a festival to Hashem.
Okay, so now we have 7 days, right? The first time we're seeing the concept of 7 days, because in the beginning we just saw one day. We've seen a day, we've seen a month. We haven't seen a week.
Now it's telling us when we get to Israel, it's for 7 days.
Okay, maybe. It doesn't, I mean,
not while we're in the desert.
Okay, it doesn't have to mean that though. First it's saying that you're going to do this service when you're in Israel too, and then it's 7 days, and what's on the seventh day, you'll have a celebration for Hashem. It's only the seventh day?
Yeah,
what about the first day, right? Where's the first day? Oh, maybe the first day we said in the beginning.
Yeah.
Ah, so maybe that, we already knew the first day, but now we know the seventh day. But why don't you say it all at once? It's crazy. Okay. Okay, so now we have a mitzvah to eat matzah. Okay, for all 7 days.
Perfect. Matzah shall be eaten throughout the seven-day period.
Okay, I kind of figured that from the last verse.
No comets may be seen in your possession, nor may leaven be seen in your possession in all your borders.
Ah, okay, so how is this different than the first time we're told not to eat chametz?
We're not to, this, no, we can't own it. No, we can, yeah.
So, okay, so we can't own it, we can't see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can't touch it, we can't look at it, we can't, you know, like, nothing.
Can it exist in the field? Or do we have to clean the whole country out?
No.
Yeah, we just can't. We can't have it in our possession, and we can't see it.
So people don't think that we're eating it.
Maybe if it doesn't say that, maybe just that's part of the commandment. Not only can you not eat it, you can't own it, right?
Well, it says if it should.
What's that line in Pulp Fiction about in Amsterdam? You can smoke it, but you can't own it. What is the whole thing where John Travolta gets into the whole thing?
Oh,
how's it go?
I don't remember.
I don't know.
What's the difference between hummus and leaven?
Same thing.
Him and Samuel L. Jackson's whole conversation
not
at the beginning of the movie about like
leaven,
the funny things about Amsterdam.
Right?
No?
I don't know. I remember. Because it says both. It says no hummus may be seen in your possession, and then it says no leaven may be seen. What's the difference?
So now we have this concept of sa'or, the leavening agent, right? Which is a new concept. So first we said don't eat chametz.
Which is?
Chametz, we're assuming now, is food that has been leavened, sa'or is the leavening agent itself.
But
or you know, or the concentrated leavening agent. Yeah. Well, it's not only yeast that leavens things. There are many other things that can do it, but that's the prime example. Yeah.
But how do we know that it is something with leaven? Because it says nor. No hametz, nor leaven.
So right now we're working off of the oral tradition as to what these things were. Yeah, that's kind of been unchanged. Yeah. Okay, so now we have, we're repeating the matzah 7 days, and where, v'lo yirei lecha chametz, v'lo yirei lecha asor b'kol gvulecha. For how long is that? That commandment, not to have chametz or se'or?
Throughout the 7 day period.
Is that 7 days?
It says matzah shel. Yeah, it's throughout the 7 day period.
Well, it doesn't say explicitly. It's kind of implied. You should eat matzah in 7 days, and you shouldn't see chametz or se'or in your gvulecha, right? So implication is that it's 7 days. It doesn't say it again, but the implication is it's 7 days. Okay, next line.
And you shall tell your son on that day, saying, "It is because of this that Hashem acted on my behalf when I left Egypt."
Right. Okay. Well, let's stop here, because then we're going to get into.
And it shall be a sign for you. And it shall be a sign. It shall be for you a sign on your arm. And
okay. So that's right. Tefillin. So that's that's two.
There's another sentence there. You shall observe this degree at its designated time from year to year. So was this an arbitrary designation of that day?
Of which day?
The first day of the observance?
Wasn't arbitrary. It's saying this is the day you left Egypt, so that's why it's today.
No, because then, and you shall designate.
It's designated.
Okay.
I mean, this should be permanent, right?
And that's the time. You can switch it around. I guess that's what it's saying.
Right. Okay, so we got a lot of stuff here, right? A lot of confusing, complicated stuff that doesn't seem to be very clear. So, now let's look at this kind of big picture, and we'll see what we can do with this. Now, what's our time frame here? What's happened? Where are the Jewish people now in the story?
Just left?
They're getting ready.
They are in the process of leaving. They're still in Egypt, right? The 10th plague has happened. They're getting kicked out. Karban Pesach is over. It's really the next parsha that begins with them leaving, and then Paro chasing them, and then the splitting of the Red Sea.
I don't think the 10th plague happened yet, right?
The previous
no,
one
it did, yeah,
says,
yeah. Go back.
And it happened on that very day Hashem took the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt.
Right. So
that's verse before what I started reading.
So this is the day they're leaving. Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. On that very day, the verse before, 51, it happened on that very day Hashem took the children of Israel. Right. So this is the day they're leaving Egypt. So are they still physically in Egypt? Have they just left? But they're In process. Okay. Now, is this the best time for Hashem to be giving them this or these commandments?
Well, they're going to remember that day forever. It's like very the day you're leaving everything behind.
Right.
And I think Hashem is saying to remember this day, because, and he's very clear, he says it twice, with a strong hand, I'm taking you, like, this is, basically, this is the reason why I'm, like...
But isn't that clear to them? Meaning, I would think, I'd be least concerned about them forgetting now, right, today, when it's happening, right? They're not going to forget it now.
But that's why he's saying, well, I think Hashem is saying, because there's a chance that future generations might forget it. It's like, remember this day and teach it to your children, and this is what you're going to do.
Okay, so we get, and that's at the end of this whole thing was teaching to your children.
On the other hand, he's saying this to Moses, not to the children of Israel.
True, but that's a pretty common way of doing things.
That's true, and then Moses said to the people.
Yeah, yeah. So Moshe was like, he was the prophet, so he would often relay the message. So that's not that unusual.
Actually, it's sort of interesting. He speaks to Moses saying, sanctify to me every firstborn. And in the next line, it says, Moses said to the people, and he talks about something entirely different, namely Passover.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good question. So, he's not making this stuff up. So, yeah. Obviously, that seems to be, that's maybe part of it. Let's put it this way. He's probably not telling the Jewish people the first part yet. Maybe he's not telling them about the firstborn because it's not really all that relevant to them yet. What are they going to do with that information? What are they going to do with any of this information? So, what are they going to do with any of this information? Now, like, what are they going to do with it? They're going to have to...
Remember it until they get to Israel.
Right, but in Israel, I mean, they think it'll be soon. It ends up being 40 years, but they think it'll be sooner than that. But still, can this wait a week? Can this wait till we receive the Torah? They're going to be told this again when they receive the Torah. So why do they need to get this now and not just wait till Mount Sinai? Yeah.
Might just like kind of be not to like maybe Hashem's trying to like not scare them. I mean like kind of like make them like have their hopes high. Like he's talking about taking them to the land of milk and honey and saying like you're going to be there and you're going to be remembering this day like every single year. So it's kind of like even though things are really intense and hectic right now. Like, you're going to be looking back at this day, and you're going to be going to this place that I'm going to show you, so kind of just, like, don't worry about it. You know, just keep on trucking. You're going to get there, and you're going to be looking back at this and, you know, chilling out.
So it's to kind of get them excited for the future.
Yeah,
to give them
yeah, like, pump them up a little bit and not, you know, and not let them freak out. And, like, you even see, like, when they're going towards, you know, the sea or the river or whatever, before Moses splits it, they're like, they're kind of freaking out, you know? They see the Egyptians coming after them, right. And they're getting all scared again and stuff. And
so you're focusing a lot on the commandments to do this in Israel. I mean, that's a big part of it.
And he's like telling them that this is, you're going to the place of, you know, milk and honey, and like, it's like this. You know,
I'm saying that's the line you're really focusing on here. Yeah, teaching your children, you have a future. Okay, that's interesting. So you think that as they're leaving Egypt, they're scared for their future. They're scared for their lives almost.
Yeah, I mean, and everything's like really weird and different, and you know, changing and uncomfortable and stuff. And Hashem maybe is just trying to like tell them, you know, don't focus on this. Just you know, get through it, and you're gonna.
But he sort of sneaks that in.
But I think to that point,
all this other stuff.
When people are like going through a change like this, like you know, the more you tell them, like this is what's happened, this is when, this is why, like it just kind of helps people understand things better with a different.
Okay, so let's discuss this transition because I wanted to bring that up. You guys brought up for me, perfect. So how would you describe the transition they're going through now? What how would you describe this transition from leaving Egypt to their next stage?
It's
pretty chaotic.
Okay, and then what sense? Like
it's a change of mentality and physicality also. Mm. Like they're leaving Egypt physically and mentally they're getting out of that slave mentality to where they are their own people and Hashem's people and they're looking back at the days and telling their kids like, I remember when I was a slave in here and now like look where we are.
Okay, so they're going from slave to what?
Freedom.
And more than freedom but just like his chosen people, like on the top, pretty much.
Okay, so we discussed this a long time ago when we read the story originally. So they're going from the depths of slavery to literally the top of the world, right? They're going from the least powerful people to the world to the most powerful people in the world with Hashem's protection. Now,
do they realize it at this point?
Well, they've seen the 10 plagues. They've seen in a year and a half they went from being slaves to being ushered out of Egypt. And the Egyptians are running for their lives and giving them all their gold and possessions.
We're not there yet.
Well, no, we are. They've already... The 10 plagues are over. They've already been ushered out. They're leaving Egypt.
They've just been a way out.
Right. But they know what's happening to them is not normal. Right? And it's interesting because, you know, we can't take the story for granted, right? Because we know, whenever you know the ending, you take the story for granted. So you don't go through the emotional process. Like you see a movie for the second time, you're not as nervous for the characters because you know how it ends up okay. So it's fine, right? It's hard to get as connected to the storyline because, so too here, it's the same thing. We know the outcome, but we have to recall that the Jewish people weren't so sure how this was going to turn out. I mean, as much as faith they had in Hashem...
They were pretty scared.
They're pretty scared. When Moshe comes in and says, "Hi, Hashem sent me to save you," they didn't embrace him. They "You're making it worse for us. You're going to kill us. Get out of here," right? They weren't at a stage. They weren't at a frame of mind where they were just waiting for Hashem to save us and then the magic carpet will just get us out of here. I mean, that wasn't their mentality at all. That's not where they were. So to go so quickly from where they were to where they are now is unparalleled, probably in human history. I can't think of another comparison. And just in our own times, if you think about the process of the black slaves in America gaining freedom and gaining equality and gaining a level that's equal to the rest of this country, We're 150 years after the Civil War, and we're not even close to there, right? It's been 150 years in this country, and I don't think any of us would say that, well, there's pure equality, there's no issues here, we're fine, right?
But that may be the reason why the Jews didn't stay in Egypt. You can't stay where you were slaves and be free.
And still be free for both. Okay, that's true. But... to be free typically means, okay, now you start over again, right? If you think about, I don't know, think about the Jews living in Russia during the pogroms, and they got out, right? Where do you start out? You start out on the bottom. You have to work your way up again, right? You start.
They were still running.
What?
They were still running for the next 50 years.
Right. I'm saying, but when they came to America, like, you know, they were... a whole new adjustment, but you're not starting out on top, you're starting out on the bottom. And then over time, it slowly builds up, and the next generation, maybe two generations later, now you have a whole new life. But for what's happening to them, it is unparalleled, and is impossible for them to adjust to. So it's completely impossible. So, as they're leaving, there's a lot of things happening here. In one sense, Hashem has to comfort them because they're so uncertain about their future, and Hashem also has to level their heads a little bit, right? It's like, right? You guys play Super Mario Brothers? Who plays Super Mario Brothers?
What was that?
What?
What was that?
It came out in the '80s. Super Mario Brothers. Okay. What? So Super Mario Brothers. This applies to
Mario. You call it Mario. It's Mario.
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 Where do you come
from? Let's not get into the Sam. This will apply to pretty much any video game, right?
This has to do with where you grew up, how you pronounce that.
Yeah, okay. So in Super Mario Brothers, you could get fireballs, right? They had this, you know, you could jump on the flower, and then suddenly you develop the ability to throw fireballs and kill anything in your path, right? Now, psychologically, as you're playing the game, something happens to you, like... first, you're a regular guy. Now you can throw fireballs and kill people, right? You're not the same when you're throwing fireballs and killing stuff. You're just not the same, right? Now, like, oh my goodness. It changes your whole view of the world, right?
let alone star power. And you're just going.
Oh, yeah, and anything that touches you, boom, that's just falling off you because you got a force field, right? So you can't be the same. You can't look at the world the same because now you've got magic powers, right? The Jewish people have magic powers now, right? I mean, they've got magic powers. God's just doing stuff for them, crazy stuff, like, you know, miraculous stuff. So they can't be the same. Yeah.
I think they still have the feeling, well, what have you done for me lately? A day goes by without a miracle, and maybe God left us.
Okay, so we see that, right? At the same time, right? Whenever somebody goes through extreme changes, right? Someone hits the lottery, right? And you see this a lot with, like, you know, you take the inner city kid who grew up with nothing and then he makes it to the NBA and now he's making $10 million a year. How often do those things end well? Not often, right?
Very few times.
Yeah, I remember Sports Illustrated had an article about, this is many years ago, about football players or sports players, about what they did with their money. And, like, this one had, like, 10 Lamborghinis, and this one owned 7 houses, and, like, you know, it was just absurd, you know, because, first of all, you can't go from nothing to everything and be able to have perspective. It's just too difficult. You don't have the tools for it. There are no, not adjusted in any meaningful way. So, and at the same time, there's also knowing in the back of your mind that, look, I've had nothing. I could go back to that point, right? It's different if you grew up a certain way, you kind of view that as being your default mode. But if you grow up, you know, if you grew up poor, you grew up in a tough situation, you know, you kind of feel like you could lose it, right? There's always that sense of loss. There's always that sense that this isn't real. This is kind of a fantasy world I'm living in, but my real life was when I was, you know, before this happened to me. Now, if it's long enough, eventually you'll get used to it, right? So at this point, Michael Jordan doesn't think that he's going to lose all his money, or that, you know, he knows who he is now. But I'm sure it took him many years to, like, really feel like this is actually my life. This isn't like some fantasy that I'm playing out. So to hear, the Jewish people have not had any time to adjust to this, right? And it's going to be a lot of adjustment. They're going to be insecure. They're going to overreact. They're going to do all sorts of crazy things. And they're going to maybe have an inflated view of themselves. So right from the outset, Hashem is setting some ground rules, right? And letting them know a little bit about the perspective they should have and what's happening to them. Okay, so let's from that perspective, let's kind of read this over again, okay? So, number one. Vayomer Moshe. So Moses said to the people, remember this day on which you departed from Egypt, from the house of bondage, for with a strong hand God removed you from here. Okay, so what's the message here?
That it was God's work.
Okay, so this was God's strong hand, okay?
And they're leaving slavery.
Right, so remember this day, right? Why do you need to remember it? Because you might forget where you came from. You might forget where you came from. You might forget where you were. And that's another, that's just as dangerous to a certain extent. So number one, don't forget where you came from. And then at the same time, if you're going to think that you're all that in a bag of chips, so remember that I'm the one who took you out. Mm-hmm. Right? So the two messages are happening simultaneously. The first message is, you know, remember what happened here. Don't forget where you came from. And at the same time, remember that Hashem is the one who did this. Okay. So, and remember this so that it becomes part of your, you know, part of your mentality. And v'lo ye'echel chametz. So why, and here, and don't eat chametz. Now that still doesn't seem to make any more sense.
It would make more sense later when they talk about eating matzah.
Okay, so.
He's talking about the past, the present, and the future. And I think the chametz is.
The chametz is the future.
Yeah, and right. It's always like, okay, you're leaving the house of, you know, like, you're not going to be slaves. I'm doing this. And, like, don't take this for granted. Like, you're going to have to keep it. Like, you're going to have to do something for this. It's not like a free cake.
Okay.
Free lunch.
So what is chametz? Okay, let's start with that. What is chametz? What separates chametz from matzah?
The leavening.
The leavening, okay. What causes the leavening?
Yeast.
But
oxygen.
Yeah, but yeast is the most extreme example, right? It, if you just let it go, the dough will rise on its own. The sugars will cause it to rise on its own.
Break down into gas.
Exactly. Right. So it won't grow to the extent that it will with yeast, but there...
Oh, yes, it will if you leave it long enough.
If you leave it long enough, it can keep going to that level. Okay. So the difference between matzah and chametz is what? Is air. Right?
Yeah.
Gas, air, right? That's the only difference. What?
That's it.
What else is there?
What's the difference? You don't need air.
The yeast. I mean, yeast dissolves, so it doesn't. You know, it's not even there anymore.
The difference is texture.
Right. It's texture. It's taste. It's taste. It's texture. It's look. It's feel.
And time.
Or how long it takes.
Yeah,
right.
It takes more time.
The finished product. What's the difference between matzah and chametz? It's
flat.
It's all externals, right? I mean, there's nothing substantially different about it. It's the same ingredients, right? It just has a different look, a different taste, a different feel, a different, you know, all the externals are different, right? So, when it comes to chametz versus matzah, so chametz represents externals, right? That's what it is. It's all for show. The chametz is all for show. And that's what we're dealing with here. So there's an interesting Gemara in Brachos on Yud Zayin Amid Aleph. And at the end of the second paragraph of the tractate Brachos, so we get all these different kind of individual prayers that different sages from the Talmud kind of made up, said on their own, or they added to their own tefillah, their own davening. Things, you know, they kind of came up with some stuff that were meaningful to them. And actually what we end up saying at the end of Shemone Esrei, the Elohai Netzor, is kind of one of those prayers. It's kind of a made-up prayer that was added later on. But it was just like so nice they added it. So here you have a bunch of them. So here's one of them. So it says, Rabbi Alexandri Basar Tzilse Amar Hachi. So Rabbi Alexandri, after his Shemone Esrei prayer, would say this. Yir Som of Necha Hashem Elokeinu, may it be your will, Hashem our God. Shetami Deinu Bekaren Or, one second. Did I have the right one here? I'm sorry. Next one. He had two prayers. Okay. Rabbi Zandri Basar, so this is what Rabbi Zandri said. Gol of Yidul Fenecha is revealed and known before you. Shiritzonenu Lasas Ritzonecha. That our will is to perform your will. Umishia cave, and who prevents us from performing your will? Seor Shebi'isa, the yeast in the dough. Rishibu Malchios, and our subjugation to foreign regimes. So it says, what are the two things that prevent us from following Hashem's will? The yeast in the dough, and subjugation to foreign regimes. So the second one we understand is that if you're being controlled by a foreign entity, and you have no control over your life, so you can't do the mitzvah, right? If you're living in communist Russia, so to put on tefillin, to eat matzah and Pesach, all these things are going to be very, very difficult. Something's going to be next to impossible. You don't have any control, right? But what's the first one? How could it be that the yeast in the dough is what causes us not to have a relationship with Hashem? That's hard to understand, right?
Especially because we have to eat challah on Shabbos.
Yeah, exactly. We yeast every Shabbos.
Is there a commandment to eat challah on Shabbos?
What?
Is there a commandment?
We don't look at it as preventing us from having a relationship with God, right? So Rashi helps us out.
Maybe because bread is so yummy, then forget about everything else.
Maybe we forget where we came from if we eat.
One of the things it happened when the Jews had to leave Egypt, they didn't have the time to have the bread rise.
Right.
And this is a mitzvah.
So you're right.
It's the same thing what they eat.
But you're right. That explains the mitzvah to eat matzah. It doesn't explain the prohibition not to eat chametz. I mean, we could eat matzah on Pesach.
But we have to remember exactly copy what they meant.
But we're not copying that. They didn't not eat chametz for 7 days. They didn't say we're not eating chametz for 7 days. They ate matzah because that's what they could eat. I don't know, maybe 3 days later they did sit down and eat some chametz, right?
Yeah, you weren't there and I wasn't, that's right.
Right, but I mean, the purpose of matzah we know about, the symbolism of matzah we understand. But just because we have a mitzvah to eat matzah doesn't mean we'd have to have a prohibition of eating chametz. That's not necessary for us to perform that mitzvah.
But you said 7 days.
No, it's fine. So eat it for 7 days and eat chametz too. Just make sure you're eating matzah. Right? You don't have to prohibit and obliterate chametz in order to eat matzah. Those are two separate things. Right? No, they're connected, but it doesn't have to be that way. That's right. So
why are you doing it?
What?
Then why are we doing it?
See, I love when I turn around so much that now you're questioning my very assumptions. It's good. So this is what Rashi says. So Rashi says, what is orsha? But Issa, so it's not literal. We're not literally talking about yeast and dough. Yitzahara shebil vavenu hamachmit senu. Right? It's talking about the evil inclination, the yitzahara that's in our heart that causes, translate this, hamachmit senu, that makes us into chametz. Right? What does it mean? It means that what prevents us from being close to Hashem is when we puff ourselves up, is when we make ourselves into more than we're not.
And when we care about the external more of the...
Right. And when we care so much about the external things in life that we forget about the internal things in life. So the leavening agent, and chametz is an allegory, right? It's seen as an allegory. That's the way we describe haughtiness, externals, things that are beyond what we need. Those are the exact things Hashem is really worried about right now, as the Jewish people are about to go out into the world as God's people, right? So we have two things. It's eat matzah, remember where you came from, right? And at the same time, don't eat chametz, because by eating chametz, it doesn't mean that if you eat chametz now you're going to be haughty. But by not eating chametz, it's sending the message, remember not to be too haughty, right? It's supposed to lower us. It's supposed to kind of bring us down a notch, right? Intention is supposed to bring us down a notch. And by not doing it then, it's supposed to remind us to that just because we're God's people doesn't mean we should make ourselves and build ourselves up more than that we are. Ultimately, we're not that great. We have to do it for ourselves. We have to prove it for ourselves. So that's kind of the point here. As an aside, I was doing some research today, and I was trying to find out how far back does this go. Like if you actually find yeast, I mean, yeast is a pretty, strange object to put into food, right? It's you might think it's poisonous. Right? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to put it into food and assume it's going to help, right?
Yeast is used to make a lot of things.
No, I know, but when did it start? Who's the first one who said, let's put this into dough?
The first one who figured out how to make beer.
Well, beer becomes part of that a little later on, right? Oh, who's the first one to have beer?
Beer is only 150 years old.
Beer? Beer?
Yeah.
Beer's thousands of years old. Thousands of years. Same, the yogurt. Talmud talks about beer.
You need yeast to make yogurt.
What? You need some sort of... Right. Yeah. So,
Jesus.
So I don't know. This might be nothing, but I thought I found it interesting. The earliest...
What is yeast? That's a fungus?
It's... Yeah.
Bacteria.
It's bacteria.
Bacteria.
Where do you get it from?
The grocery store.
What? It grows in all sorts of things. They
it
cultivate
grows on
it.
Skin also.
I think they cultivate it from plants grocery? Mostly. It's yeah, on plants and things like that.
We have yeast on our skin.
But there's all different sorts of bacteria that can be used.
But you still don't need, not yeast, you don't need yeast to make bread.
No. But it was. But a leavening agent. Seor is a leavening agent. So that's already something that we're talking about. That's an agent used to leaven things.
That's water.
No, but we're not prohibiting water drinking using
mix
water.
Flour and water, it will rise.
No, I know, but to have a specific leavening agent, so
something to boost it.
Something that where the entire purpose is just to boost. The entire purpose of yeast is just to boost it, right? That's the whole purpose of it. So the earliest known,
it's like bling
cases, like
it's just like bling.
Exactly.
Just
got
it.
It's bling.
It means, fancy jewelry and things like that. So the first time, so we have it in the Egyptian hieroglyphics was the first recorded history of any sort of use of yeast or of baking bread. I was trying to find pictures of this hieroglyphics. I couldn't find it. So I don't know. I thought maybe there's something to the Egyptians are the ones who kind of developed this technology. They had it. They started it. So that was a very Egyptian thing. You can imagine that they that maybe for the Jews who were living in Egypt, using yeast to have their bread rise was a real declaration that we're just as good as them now, or we're, you know, almost as good as... Then, I don't know, maybe at the time that was special.
Or a symbol of luxury, because maybe as slaves they didn't have access to
it. Exactly, but now they do. Now they can do it. So now that's one of the first things they might want to do to kind of prove a point. I don't know.
It's like maybe in this day and age, if Hashem said, I'm taking you out of Egypt, blah, 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 and don't buy, like, Lamborghinis, you know?
Well, I mean, I give an example. When I was in Rome...
Did you buy a Lamborghini?
No, I did not.
How about just a Fiat?
I barely can afford the plane tickets. So if you go to Rome, there's a shul in Rome. This beautiful, elaborate shul. Anyone's been there before?
Yeah, it's a great synagogue.
Yeah, it's spectacular. It, yeah. Spectacular.
I think that's the name of it, the Great Synagogue.
Is it? I don't know. So when I got a tour, so the person was here. So it was built in the 1800s. Basically, it was built when the Jews got out of the ghetto, right? And when they could first kind of live a regular life. So what they hired someone who built these elaborate churches. And they said, build us a shul like that church, you know, like those churches.
The way I heard that the Jews could not be engineers at those times.
Right.
The way I heard that.
Okay.
And so they had to hire...
Right. But the model of what they wanted was... I mean, it feels like a church a little bit. I mean, it's so elaborate. The high ceilings and all these all this imagery... Right, like a very ornate thing, yeah. So the way he describes, you know, I don't know if it's true.
You get a minion?
What? They actually really didn't have a minion. but the point, the message was that now that we can build this, we're going to show you that we can build it just as big. We can do it just as right. And so maybe that's part of what this is. Okay, number two. So lesson number one is... Right, I saved you. Don't forget it. And the seor and the chametz don't need chametz. So it doesn't say don't need chametz during the 7 days. So maybe you can kind of extend the message a little bit. Don't need chametz, right? Doesn't mean don't need chametz, but learn the lesson of not eating chametz all the time. Right? This isn't that lesson. The lesson of chametz is not a lesson for 7 days. Don't need chametz. Don't get too high on yourselves. So maybe that's why it's put that way. Kind of right in the beginning, before we have any context for it, is it supposed to kind of send that message right away? Okay. Next we get into the month of the year. And then we start to get into the context of it. Right? So Rashi points out that there's a message here. The fact that it was done in the spring is Hashem's way of... It was Hashem's kindness that He let them leave when the weather was good. But you have to realize they're about to travel. So if it was summer or winter, it wouldn't have been so nice. So Hashem does it right at the beginning of spring when He knows they'll have a few months of nicer weather. So that's to that extent Hashem was looking out for them. That's what Rashi points out. But I think there's also part of it is remembering the moment, right? Mm-hmm. By remembering the time it happens and the context it happens in, it helps you remember the moment better. Right, it helps you understand.
But I also think there's something, because springtime is always connected to like a rebirth, a new beginning.
Right.
Like when life starts, like a lot of, like the cycles begin. So, I mean, I would have probably interpreted more on that. So like today you're leaving, you're like free people, it's a new beginning, it's a new...
I agree with that strongly.
No, I don't disagree. I'm not saying I disagree at all. I'm saying that... What I'm trying to say here is that Hashem is speaking to this people at this time, because the mitzvah of celebrating Pesach, they're going to get again. They're going to get it at Mount Sinai. They're going to get it in later parshas. Why is Hashem telling them this now? This is a message to this people at this time, right? He wants them to know: number one, don't forget what happened here. Don't forget where you came from. Don't get too high on yourselves, and pass this on to the next generation, because there's going to be an interesting dilemma. What's the dilemma? For the people of this generation, they might get too high on themselves. They may make too big a deal out of this. Right? Look how great we are. Look what Hashem did for us. But what's going to happen in two generations from now?
The opposite.
The opposite is going to happen. Mm. It's going to be irrelevant. Sure. Right? try to convince someone without something happened 70 years ago, is that relevant anymore? Right? It's very difficult. Try to convince a kid today the importance of their World War II is something in the history books, right? It's not to do with their lives. It's their grandparents' lives. So they're sending the message also right away that you have to make sure this lasts. Otherwise, we're going to miss the point here. So Hashem has to, in one sense, lessen their ego, but at the same time, remind them how important it is for them to build it up to the next generations. It's a very difficult balance. How do you do that, right? So that's why Hashem is saying, do both things at once. Deliver the message, but part of the message is don't get too high in yourselves. So that's why we end up getting to Vegad Telavincha, teaching your children, because that's what we have to do. When you get to the land of Israel, remember to do this. Why? What's going to happen when you get to the land of Israel?
It's going to be paradise, and you'll forget everything.
It's right.
Flowing of milk and honey.
Right, and it's going to be less relevant. You'll be more independent. You'll need Hashem less. This is going to be less relevant to you. The law, going to Israel is going to make it even less. When they're in the desert, what happened to them in Egypt is still connected to their present reality. Right? We're still living this state because we left Egypt, we got nowhere to go. Right? But once you get there, you forget about it. Right? It's like, you know, when you're flying somewhere, you have a stopover. So when you're in your stopover, you might not be in a plane right now, but in your mind, you're still traveling. Mm-hmm. Right? You're sitting in the airport, but you're traveling now. But when you get to your destination, the last thing you want to think about is your flight. Like, that was what we just went through, right? God, you know, you put that in your head as quickly as you can, that's over with. You know, the desert, they're on the stopover. They're still leaving Egypt in the desert. But when you get to Israel, you're not leaving Egypt anymore, right? Your whole reality has changed. Your whole focus is going to change. That's when you have to remember it, or this whole thing will be lost. All of this will be lost. So that's why it's so important. So we started off by lessening their ego, and you bring up chametz as part of that. You bring in the context of it. But then, when you go to Israel, we have to remember this. And how are we going to do this? So we're going to do two things at once. We're going to celebrate it, and we're going to send the message of the chametz. Right? We're going to have the matzah and the chametz happening at once during a celebration. The matzah is going to remind them what happened. The chametz is going to remind them then and now not to get too high in ourselves. And we're going to celebrate to make sure that it lasts. And then finally, you'll get to the point when you'll teach your children, because the whole focus of this is that this has to be passed on to the next generation. That's kind of a loose way, you know, that's kind of the way I was looking at it.
You can say that you have to be humble to remember these things and be humble what has happened generation before.
Right, you have to celebrate and be humble. And the whole Seder night is this balance, right? We're kings and we're slaves. We're remembering that we're slaves, but now we're free. But we're still slaves. But we're free, but we're slaves, but we're free. I mean, we keep on going back and forth between the two things, right? We start, you know, we start from the beginning, looking at ourselves as slaves. Avadim Hayinu, we're slaves in Egypt. We eat matzah, we eat maror. And then by the end of the Seder, right, that's the Karban Pesach, and we're celebrating. Right, we go through this process every single year. That's the idea, is that Pesach is supposed to be remembering both sides of the equation. So Hashem is trying to relay that message. He can't just say, have this holiday. This is kind of laying out in its own way, you know, what the thought process is. And he wants them leaving Egypt thinking in these terms. He wants them leaving Egypt thinking, you know, we're not just leaving Egypt and now we're free. Okay, now it's the next stage, right? Now we have to think about how we're going to remember this and pass it on to the next generation. And we have to start that right now, because if you don't start that right now, it's going to get lost pretty quickly. Because, you know, the 9/11/2010 is not the same as 9/11/2002, right? It's never going to be. It's impossible.
What's the purpose of this one sentence, just totally out of context, which talks about tefillin?
Tefillin is next week. No, 2 weeks.
No, it's right here. There's a sentence.
I know, but that's a different mitzvah. So we'll discuss. We'll discuss that when we get to tefillin. We'll talk about tefillin.
But it's in the middle.
Okay. Look, I can't give away all my material. I give me something to hold
preview.
On. Yeah, you know, give me something here.
Well, I think kind of put it in a very funny way. You know?
Perfect. So we'll start with that question.
You have to page 6. study it.
So in 2 weeks we'll do tefillin, so we'll start with that. All right. Good night.